Are you a small business owner looking to scale your business and your profits? Are you looking for strategies to find balance in your life as an entrepreneur? Stay tuned while Craig Staley, founder of HG Site Design, a website design and marketing agency, shares strategies from successful small business owners, authors, and experts on how to do just that. Let's join Craig as he explores how we can all take our businesses to the next level on the Small Business School podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Small Business School podcast. My guest today is Anita A.C. Clinton. She is the founder of Be Great Global and the host of the Be Great Global podcast. Anita is many things. She played high-level college basketball for the University of Illinois. She is a podcaster. She's an author. She's a TEDx speaker. She is a coach, but maybe above all things, she's a great storyteller. And you'll find that out in the podcast today. She tells a few really great stories that just draw you in, and probably none better than her own life story. It is a very powerful story, and I would probably say the most powerful life story we've had on the podcast to date. I'm not going to spoil it because I won't do it justice. So without further ado, Anita A.C. Clinton. All right. Welcome back, everybody. My next guest today is Anita Clinton. She is the founder of Be Great Global and the host of the Be Great Global podcast. Hey, Anita, how are you?
I'm good, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Super excited to be here.
Yeah. Before we get kind of into the details, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of your personal background?
Yeah. So, you know, I always have to go back to age 10. I know that's pretty far, but we'll get through it really quick. So I started playing basketball at the age of 10. I stood 6 feet tall, wearing over a size 11 shoe. And so my favorite teacher was my math teacher, Ms. Dunbar. And so I'm coming out of Ms. Dunbar's class one day, and she says to me, "Anita, have you ever thought about playing basketball?" And I look at her and I'm like, "No." And she was like, "You should come try out for the team." Now, because she was my favorite teacher and I'm a bit of a people pleaser, I went ahead and tried out for the team. And who knew, right? So I guess Ms. Dunbar knew, but I was a natural. And my size, my height, my speed, it just all worked when it came together. And she spent extra time working with me. I went on to play high school, varsity level, and then from there, got a full scholarship to the University of Illinois. And my hopes, my dreams, my desires was to play professional basketball. Like, that's what I wanted to do. However, my junior year, I had a career-ending knee injury. And from that point, I was clueless as to who I was, what I wanted to do in my life. And so I decided that my life was no longer worth living. And I began to take every pill that had been prescribed to me after my knee surgery. And I laid down, I said a small apologetic prayer, and my plans was never to wake up again. However, 4 hours later, not only did I wake up, but I ended up in the hospital and I overhear the doctor saying, "Looking at the potency of the medication that she took, it's truly a miracle she's still here." And from that point on, I wanted to know why. Why was I saved? Why was I still here? And essentially the question I was asking is, what's my purpose? And so I began this 20-year journey of discovery. I wanted to understand the reason for my existence. And so Be Great Global is what is the byproduct of that 20-year journey. And my job today is I help people connect to and begin to step into the thing that they've been put on this earth to do.
Wow.
I'm the connector.
What a powerful story that is. You know, you hear about different athletes or coaches, you know, their career ends usually, you know, in some natural way. They get to a level and they can't progress or whatever it is. And they feel like that's been a part of their identity for how many years. That kind of is their identity. So definitely can see how that would be so difficult to have a career-ending injury and feel that, you know, this has been my identity for so long. What a powerful story to have a second chance at life. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say that it was one of those periods where, you know, it was one of the worst seasons of my life, but also it opened me up to do what I'm doing now, to do something that I'm excited to do, that's fulfilling, and that makes me money.
Yeah, that's where all roads come together, which is great. So talk about that. How did you get started with your business?
Yeah. So, you know, through the years, I have something that I call my genius box, right? Mm-hmm. And so in a genius box is all your gifts, talents, experiences, skills, expertise. And so over that 20-year period, I would just try out different things to see what I liked, what would stick, what really, really excited my spirit. You know, I wanted to find that thing. And one of the things that I realized is that I really enjoyed helping other people. And even from a kid, I can remember as a kid, my cousin had a homework assignment and I could always draw. And so he needed to draw one of his favorite Matchbox cars. And he kept trying, and he kept balling up the paper and throwing it out. And he just started crying and walked away. Well, I walk over to the table, I pick up his pencil and I draw the Matchbox car. And I was like, hey, Steve, it's drawing. Come do it. Just, you know, finish what, add it, color it, do what you need to do to it. But I've always had a heart to help people. I am a natural fixer, right? Yeah. And so when it comes to talking about purpose and understanding purpose, you know, I'm the person to help you figure out whatever that thing is. And I believe that our world becomes a better place when people are walking in their purpose.
That's amazing. So talk about playing high level basketball. So you played for the University of Illinois. What did you learn playing high level basketball for so many years that you've now taken and you use in your everyday life?
Yeah. So, you know, I love it. So playing basketball on a major campus is the best thing ever, right? Like ever. You're like a little mini celebrity.
Yeah.
But what I learned from basketball that I still use today is the importance of hard work. Like that's number one. If you want to be successful at anything that you're doing, you know, most people have to work hard at that. And then the second thing would be the importance of being the best that you can be at what you're doing. I've learned in through basketball, but also inside of business, I say all the time, anything done in excellence, people are willing to pay a premium price for it, right? And so if I can do, first of all, for me, I don't like to waste my time. So if I'm going to do something, if I'm going to commit to doing something, I want to be the best that I could be at doing whatever that thing is. And people recognize that, they appreciate that, and they're willing to pay a premium price for that.
That's amazing. Do you feel like you somehow, I assume if you're playing that high level basketball, I assume you're a competitor. What do you compete in today, whether it's in business or in life? Like what gets your competitive juices flowing?
Yeah, everything that I do. And so, it's so funny, right? Because on one end, I say that I don't have competitors, right? Or I don't believe that any of us have competitors inside of business or whatever it is that we're doing, because no one can do what I do like I do it. And I can't do what other people do the way that they do it if they are authentically being who they are, right? So there's no competition. And there's more than enough out here for everybody. But being a competitor, which I am naturally, you know, I'm always looking to see like what's happening. What are other people doing and saying, okay, how can I compete against this? And so for me, that works in my favor because now that becomes some sort of accountability for me, right? So it's like, okay, I hate to lose, right? I am a sore loser for real. And so I always want to win. And so I'm always looking to do something better, to take something to the next level. I had a business partner that we did a course, a digital course, and we would have our weekly calls and she would get on the call sharing what she had done for the week. Sometimes I was there with her, but there are other times where I had kind of slacked out a little bit and I would be like, oh, okay, come on, Nita, you got to get on because she can't beat you. Like, she can't beat you. And she didn't even know we were in competition, right? Yeah, yeah. But in my mind, it was a competition.
Yeah. You're trying to work the extra hour to try to get more accomplished than she was.
Absolutely. I was not going to show up the next week and not have nothing to report.
Yeah, that's great. So you talked about a little bit about in your introduction about kind of this zone of greatness and people's gifts. Do you think it's tough for people, you know, whether it's your clients or other people you've talked to really figure out what their zone of greatness is? Or do you think it's something that comes natural to people?
It does not come natural at all. I think that majority of the clients that I work with, they come in and the biggest question is, what's my purpose? And they're saying, I don't know what my purpose is. And so with that, I've created just pulling things from different people, different conversations, and then figuring out what actually worked for me and then testing it out on a couple of people. This strategy called the, what I call the zone of greatness. And it's this sweet spot where the thing that you are passionate or obsessed with meets the thing that you have what I call a genius or your gifts, talents, skills, knowledge, expertise in, and it creates impact for other people, positively impacting the lives of other people. And when you can find that space or that sweet spot where the three of them connect, it's kind of like a Venn diagram, then you're in your zone, right? You're inside of your zone. And I say that in your zone, great things are bound to happen, but it gives you some insight as to the thing that you are put here to do. And the other piece that goes with that is the thing that irks the heck out of you is typically the thing that you have the answer to.
Give me an example.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I'm from Chicago originally. I live in Milwaukee now, but one day in Chicago, I lived in the suburbs and I'm trying to get to downtown Chicago. If you know anything about Chicago traffic during rush hour, it's horrible. And so I come off the expressway and I'm on a side street and I end up on one of the worst streets in the on the west side of Chicago, which is Cicero Avenue. So I'm on Cicero Avenue and I'm trying to get off and get back to the expressway. And I'm behind this 18-wheeler. And so the 18-wheeler is moving out. So I'm moving out and then it starts to break. And I'm like, what's happening? Like, why are you breaking? I'm trying to get off this street. And the 18-wheeler begins to slowly pull over to the right. And so I go past and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, saying a couple of choice words. And I see that the 18-wheeler had saw a woman on the sidewalk. And so I pull over just to be nosy to see what was happening. And the woman was a street prostitute. And, you know, I call her Trina. So I gave her a name. I call her Trina. And so as I'm looking at Trina walk up to the side door for this 18-wheeler, like the look on her face is just, it's hurting me. It's hurting me really bad because I don't believe, and no one will ever convince me of this, I don't believe that anyone was put on this earth to be a prostitute. That is nobody's purpose on earth. Right. And so I'm looking at Trina and I want to run to Trina and I want to say, Trina, no, don't do this. You know, there's something better for your life. There is a reason that you're here and this isn't it. But at that time, I had nothing to offer Trina. I could give her a couple dollars, but she couldn't live off of a couple dollars. This is how she was living, making her living. And so as I'm watching her, like tears are just streaming. And so she ends up getting into the truck and then I pull off and get on the expressway. But that thing stuck with me. When I say it stuck with me, days, weeks, months, years. And now when I look at Be Great Global, Be Great Global is the answer for Trina. If I meet Trina today, I got something to offer Trina as an alternative to that particular lifestyle.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a powerful story. And just speaking of stories, you have a great way of telling a story. And I know you're a speaker as well. If there's somebody out there that's thinking about becoming a speaker, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. So the biggest piece is practice, 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 right? You can't say that enough. And, you know, today we live in this huge information age, right? And so you can go to Google University or YouTube University and find anything that you want. When it comes to speaking, there are some skills, some techniques that you need to learn if you want to be successful in speaking. And one way to do that for free is just to go to Google and YouTube. There are so many videos, so many different blog posts that are out there that cover the speaking techniques that you will need. The other thing is join an organization like Toastmasters. It gives you a great opportunity to learn those skills and techniques, but also to practice speaking in front of people. If you don't have money for Toastmasters, say that you attend a church, ask to do the announcements one Sunday or to introduce the guest pastor, to do things that will allow you to be speaking in front of people so that one, you get comfortable doing it. But then also, even at work, you can ask your manager to allow you to lead this certain portion of the team meeting. If there is any opportunities for you to do training, if training is your thing, then do that as well. But also, there are so many opportunities for free speaking engagements, so none paid, do as many of those as you can until you perfect your trade. Once you perfect your trade, then now you can start getting paid to speak.
So as far as topic, obviously everybody has their zone of greatness, maybe a speaking topic that they're going to speak on. You know, I've heard other speakers say that you should focus on creating developing a speech, whatever that is, and then finding an audience for that speech and giving that speech over and over and over again, because the audience keeps changing, even though you're saying the same thing. Is that something you recommend? And then do you like add to it, add a subject, you know, as you get better, or, you know, what has been your experience?
Yeah. So I think that if we just go back just a little bit to the topic, I think that you want to one, definitely speak about something that you know, that you have some experience and some expertise in, but it needs to be a pain or a challenge that other people have, right? So it needs to be the solution to that pain or challenge, right? Kind of goes back to the whole purpose thing. Like you are the answer to a problem or a pain that exists in the world. So one, it needs to be that. And then the second piece to that is test it out, right? So inside of this volunteering to speak, use that as an opportunity to test out the topic and see how people respond. I'll never forget, I was watching a comedian named Michael Jr. a couple of years ago. And one of the things that he said, he was like, you know, I get asked all the time, how do I figure out what jokes to do to present to a large audience? And his response was, I practice them. So I go to open mics and I will get on the stage to test out a joke and see how people respond to it. If the joke flops, it will never make the big stage. But if that joke does well, then I will tweak it and perfect it and perfect it until it's ready for me to take it on the big stage. He says, I never come to the big stage with a joke that I have not tested.
Yeah.
And the same thing is for speaking. You never want to come, especially to a paid speaking gig, with a presentation that you haven't tested and perfected, right? That's very important. Practice, practice, practice. Even if the practicing is just in your mirror at home. In addition, we got YouTube. You can hop on YouTube and Facebook Live and LinkedIn Live now, Instagram. Hop on there and test it out. See how people respond, see what people say, and then perfect whatever that topic is.
Yeah. And one thing that came to my mind, I'm not a speaker myself other than doing a podcast and being on podcasts, but being on podcasts, I would think would be great practice. Obviously you're not giving the speech on a podcast necessarily, unless there's a speech giving podcast, I suppose, but maybe I'm sure that exists.
It does.
but at least it gives you experience, you know, pretty easy experience, kind of one-to-one usually. At least it seems like that. You know, you don't have 1,000 listeners staring at you, but you have a opportunity to talk about your topic as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an opportunity to get comfortable, because that's where you want to get. Now, let me just say this. Every speaking engagement that I have, every single one, it never fails. I get jitters. Yeah. Right before I go up on the stage, I get jitters. But one thing that I found that works, and I got this from Michael Hyatt, is I do a breathing exercise. Mm. Because at the end of the day, when we're scared, right, when we're frightened, the first thing we do is we stop breathing, right? Mm-hmm. And so in order to calm your nerves, to calm your body, simply do a couple of breathing exercises. And it can be just as simple as taking long, deep breaths. So calm your breathing down. And then every time, by the time I get the mic in my hand, I'm ready to go. All of those jitters, the little scariness, the nervousness, it's gone. Simply by breathing, right? Breathing mm-hmm. makes a huge difference.
That's definitely a good tip, because it does seem, even if you're comfortable, that first minute, 2 minutes talking, whether you're in front of 5 people or 50 people, there's that little bit of nervousness. So I'm going to try that next time. So, you know, I know you also help people with books as well. If maybe speaking isn't your deal and you want to communicate your zone of greatness through the written word, where should someone start if they're thinking about writing a book?
Yeah, great question. Great question. And I think this answer applies to anything, right? So anything that you want to start or launch, but I call it the 5 W's and an H, right? So you want to create a plan, and it doesn't have to be anything long and elaborate, but just something simple and basic. Pull out a notebook and a pen and begin to write. And so the 5 W's are why, Why do you want to write a book? Why do you want to start a podcast? Why do you want to launch this business? Really give that thing some thought. And there's something called the 7 levels deep, which says that you ask why 7 times. So you answer it the first time, why is that so? Answer the second time, why is that so? You keep going 7 levels deep to get really down to the core of why you want to do whatever this is that you want to do. The second one is what? So what do you want to do? If it's writing a book, then that is your what, right? So, or starting a podcast or whatever it may be. And then you want to go into who. Who is what you're doing, the book that you're writing, who is it going to benefit, right? Who is your target audience? And it's interesting to me that even in business, when I'm working with coaching clients and I ask the question, who is your target audience? So many times I get everybody. No, your product or service could be beneficial to everybody, but you want to have a specific target audience or a dream customer or a perfect customer in place that you know, this is who I'm creating this product for. And I use the example of the big box store Target. So I have a friend who works for P&G, and she told me years ago that target audience was Caucasian women with a household income of $100,000 and more. I think now they've tweaked that a little more to just say affluent individuals with a household income of $100,000 or more. Now, does that mean me being a Black woman, if the target audience is a Caucasian woman, that I can't shop at Target? No. It simply means that when Target is thinking about what products to put on their shelves, when they're thinking about their marketing and advertising, they're thinking about that affluent woman, or back then, the Caucasian woman with a household income of $100,000 or more. And so you need to be the same way. So when you're thinking about like what topic or what book am I going to write, or what's the topic of the book that I'm going to write about? Who is that speaking to? Is it speaking to kids? Is it speaking to seniors? Is it speaking to women or men or to, you know, faith-based individuals? Who is your book going to benefit the most? And that doesn't mean that other people would not benefit from it. It simply means that as you're writing the book, you're thinking about that specific audience. So who? And then from there, you got your how. So how are you going to do it? How are you going to do whatever you're going to do? So if it's writing your book, are you going to create an outline for that book? Are you going to set aside, you know, make a commitment to write 500 words a week until you got the book completely written? How are you going to do it? So kind of what's the process that you're going to go through to do whatever that is? And then there's when. You want to set a target date. When do you want to publish this book? When do you want to get it to the editors? When do you want to get it where it's ready to be released? Or when do you want to launch whatever that is? Set a firm date and then kind of reverse engineer what you need to do each week until that date to make sure that you're ready to go at whatever that goal is set. And then the last one is where. Where are you going to share it, right? So if it's a business like a brick and mortar, where are you going to be located? If it's an online business, okay, so where are you going to, are you going to have a website? Are you going to have an app? Are you going to just use social media? Where are you going to share it? Where can your target audience get what it is that you have to offer? So that's the 5 W's and a H.
Wow, that is awesome advice for not only just writing a book, but almost anything that you might start in business or in life, really. I think it's interesting how you talked about figuring out who is your target market, because if you are trying to market to everyone, it makes your job so much tougher as a business owner. If you know that your target market is 25-year-old females in Omaha, Nebraska or whatever, all of a sudden your job making social media posts becomes a lot easier than if you're trying to make it for everybody, because it just focuses you so much more on who you're talking to.
I agree. Yes, 100%.
So let's change gears here a little bit and let's talk more about maybe different times in your business. First, let's talk about what was the biggest challenge that you faced in your business so far and what did you do to overcome it?
My biggest challenge has been, so I worked a full-time job for the last 25 years, and I've always had a side business, right? So I've always had an entrepreneurial heart. And I, like I said, I've done different types of businesses. I've worked at many different companies doing different types of roles and having different types of roles and responsibilities. And so in 2016, I think, I decided that I wanted to go full-time in my business. and great idea in theory. However, in practice, because I didn't have a plan, I failed miserably. You know, I was trading time for dollars and I wasn't charging enough. So there was never enough time to make the money that I needed to make to live on. When I quit my job, I didn't change my spending habits. So I kept all of the expenses the same, but my income had changed, right? But I didn't make the adjustments. I didn't plan. I didn't have an emergency fund. I was not prepared to launch a full-time business. And so I highly recommend anybody, I say all the time to anybody who's looking to either quit a job or to start a business, make sure that financially you've thought through, if this goes well, amen, here's what can happen. But if it doesn't go the way that I'm planning it to go, like, what's my backup? What do I have anything to fall back on? Because you still got to live. You still got to be able to pay your rent and whatever bills, other bills that you may have. So that for me was the worst period in business of all since I've been in business.
So what did you do to overcome that? Did you go back to work at a job and take a second leap, or what was the strategy there?
I did. So I actually went back to the company that I had left. So I left on good terms. And so I was able to go back. Now, the plus of that is I was able to go back with a 10% pay increase.
Hey, there's a strategy.
Absolutely. Oh, I had stuff to make. I had credit card balances to get down. You know, I had stuff that everybody was calling me, you know, bill collectors calling me. And like, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm the person, if my phone rings, I want to answer the phone. And that's just, it's stressful and it's uncomfortable.
Pressure.
And so I did go back to work. And then, you know, I created a plan to move forward if I wanted to do that business full time or do my business full time again.
That's great. So what would you say has been the best moment in your business's history so far?
The best moment thus far. So I have two, actually. Okay. So the first one was publishing my book. So officially publishing my book. And so my book was a 10-year journey. Now, not that it took me 10 years to actually write the book. So I wrote the book back in 2015-ish. And I wrote it. It was 9 chapters. And I didn't feel like it was complete. I didn't feel like I knew enough to finish it. And so I just sat it on the shelf. 5 years later, I would pull it back out and look at it. I changed the name, the title. I tweaked some of the chapters, but it still wasn't complete. And so during COVID, you know, I tell everybody that COVID for me gave me an opportunity to get done some of those things that I hadn't had the time to do before, because now I had more time on my hands and I wanted to maximize that time. And so I sat down, pulled the book out, and everything that I needed, it just began to flow on the pages. And being able to publish, I published that book in October of last year, and it actually did pretty well. And it was exciting. It was exciting just to hold the book in my hand. So that was the first one. And then the second one was I did a TEDx talk a couple months ago. And so that was on my goals list for 5 years, and I could check that one off. And so that was also amazing.
Book and a TEDx talk. That's awesome. Congratulations on both of those.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who would you consider a mentor, and what would you say is the most important lesson they've taught you?
Yeah. So one of my mentors is a 70-year-old Caucasian woman. And I say that because when I talk to her, I say, you know, we're like an oddball couple, right?
It's not your math teacher, is it?
It is not. So my math teacher, she passed years ago from cancer.
Oh,
Miss Dunbar. I love me some Miss Dunbar. But her name is Peggy. And so what Peggy has taught me is that you're never too old to fulfill your purpose. I look at Peggy and I look at what she's doing and what she's accomplishing. Peggy works in the deaf space, right? So she works with individuals who have received a terminal illness, notification that they have a terminal illness, and she helps them create a plan to do the things that they want to do before they leave the earth. And she loves it, right? Like, it's dark to me, but she absolutely loves it. And she's 70 years old and she's still walking boldly in her purpose.
That's amazing. I have never heard of someone who does that, but what a gift.
Yeah. When I told her, when she told me what she does, I said, man, there is something for everybody.
Yeah.
Whatever is needed in the earth, there's somebody in the earth with the skills and talent to do just that.
Yep. Yeah. So before we finish up here, where can our listeners find out more about your business, social media, website, whatever you got?
Yeah, absolutely. So head on over to begreatglobal.com. You can find everything about all of the different things that I'm doing over there. Social media, I am AC Clinton and the number one everywhere. So, well, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Pinterest. And then I also have a free gift for the business owners that are out there. And so one of the things that I created during COVID, which is also doing exceptionally well, was something called Be Great Templates. And so it's the idea that, you know, most people that start businesses are not creatives, not graphic designers from that standpoint creatives. And so, you know, you're trying to market your products and services and you don't have a huge marketing budget, and so, but you still want your stuff to look good. And so these templates allow you to visually portray your products and services and look great doing them. And so I tell everybody, go hit on over there, get tested out. There's a free template at begreattemplates.com/1-O-N-E, spell it out. And you can get the free one pager template, which allows you to portray your service and your product on this one page document. And the templates are pretty easy to use. They're created in PowerPoint and in Canva. And there's an instructional guide that walks you through how to update each of them.
That's great. Well, we'll link all that in the show notes, and I'll have to give that a look as well here after we get done. If you could hop into a time machine and go back to the day that you started Be Great Global, what is the one piece of advice you'd give your past self?
Yeah, get your finances in order. You know, that has been the thing. So, you know, I grew up in a, you know, African-American family. Now, my auntie, who partially raised me, she had perfect credit. But one of the things that, of all the things that she taught me and my brother as a kid, she never taught us about managing finances. And so managing and understanding how to manage your finances. And then, you know, for business owners, there's a book that I recommend called Profit First by Mike, what's his last name?
Michalowicz.
Profit First. And he goes through like how to effectively manage the income and the profits that you're making from your business. And that has been just priceless for me inside of managing my personal finances. So understanding that as well, because at the end of the day, you need to eat, you need to have a roof over your head. And if you want to have some type of fun in life, you have to have money.
Yeah. And I think that book, I think another guest recommended it and I read it after they recommended it. It is so good because I fell in the same trap as, you know, basically he was talking about in the book where, you know, basically you're just shoving all the money into the operating expenses and, you know, I'll eat later. I don't need, you know, and let's not pay ourselves at all, you know, and it really talks about making sure that from day one, the business is paying you. You know, you might be paying a virtual assistant or an employee or whoever and not paying yourself. I think a lot of people do that. And in the name of, you know, trying to grow the business faster or bigger or that type of thing. So definitely I would say a great book to recommend. So thanks for recommending it. I really appreciate it. And thank you for all the value you provided today, Anita. We really enjoyed having you on.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me. And I just want to encourage people that are out there. So you speak to business owners. If your business is not something that you enjoy, you wake up excited to do it every morning, I would say don't immediately stop that, but start considering what are the things that I could do that I'm excited about doing that brings me joy and fulfillment, and then start to transition to do whatever that thing is.
What great advice. Because if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're not going to put 100% into it. And it's probably not going to be a long lasting business. So awesome advice. Thanks so much, Anita. I really appreciate you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Craig. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business School podcast. If you like what you heard, please share it and leave a review. It would mean the world to us. If you are a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other take their businesses to the next level. To learn more about our guest today or to be a feature guest on the Small Business School, go to craigsdaily.com/podcast for more info.